Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the June Public Safety Commission meeting. We'll start with roll call. Commissioner Blair.
Here.
Commissioner Long.
Here.
Commissioner Stodgill.
Here.
Commissioner Hoard.
Here.
And I'm Chairman Mock. A quorum of the Public Safety Commission is present, and the public meeting of the commission is called to order and now proceed. The time is 10 o'clock in the morning. The location of this meeting is the Criminal Law Enforcement Auditorium at 6100 Guadalupe, as posted in the agenda. We will now consider the agenda items that have been posted for this meeting. We'll start with an invocation from Chaplain Furman Carpenter. Please rise.
Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we're so thankful for you blessing us with another opportunity for the Public Safety Commission. Father, we thank you for each one of our commissioners. Thank you for their integrity, for their zeal to do good things, Father, for their love for our great state. Thank you for their wisdom, Father, and we ask you, Father, to bless them with extra wisdom as they are presented with opportunities today. Please continue to be with them and help them get back home safely. Thank you, Father, for the Department of Public Safety, for our good colonel, for the people that work with him, Father, and all the people that he is over. We ask you to continue to be with him and be with his command staff and others, Father, especially do we ask you to be with our men and women that are commissioned, that are on the front lines every day, Father. Thank you for what they do. Please watch over and care for them. Please help us as citizens know as these men and women in law enforcement are there to protect and with courtesy, Father, and uphold the laws that they have sworn to uphold, that without them we would have anarchy and it would not be safe for our families. Please be with them and bring them home safely. Please, Father, be with those who were here to recognize today for some award that they are deserving of, whether it's tenure or some other great effort. We ask you to be with them and their families. Please continue to be with us in this meeting, and it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Chaplain. We'll now be led in the pledges by Corporal Jared Bryant.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Please be seated. Next item on the agenda is number 4, approval of minutes of the Public Safety Commission meeting held on October 10th, 2025. I'd entertain a motion.
I'd like a motion, Commissioner Long.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Long and a second from Commissioner Hoard to approve the Public Safety Commission meeting minutes that was held on April 10th, 2025. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. I'll now turn it over to Colonel Martin for the presentations.
Chairman, we're going to start with a presentation from the Texas Highway Patrol on the Top Trooper competition. Oh, sorry. I don't have my agenda open yet. We're going to start with the awards, Chairman. So if
you and great idea.
Commissioners would join us, we'll give some awards.
The following employees will be presented a certificate in recognition of their 40 years of service and accomplishment with the Texas Department of Public Safety. Robert Davis, Texas Highway Patrol Division. Mario Orozco, Texas Highway Patrol Division. Leo Perez, Criminal Investigations Division. The Top Trooper competition began in 2012 to recognize the outstanding troopers working all over the state. The idea was to test troopers on their physical conditioning, shooting and driving skills, and job knowledge. Troopers are evaluated through a written examination, firearms qualification scores, and physical readiness assessments. They are then invited to participate in the state competition. The first Top Trooper contest was completed in February of 2012. Trooper Javier Arana Jr. participated in the first competition and did extremely well. The following month, Trooper Arana was tragically killed in the line of duty. As a tribute to his sacrifice, the competition was named in his honor. We are honored to have with us today family members of Javier Arana Jr. If you could please stand and be recognized. The 13th annual Javier Arana Jr. Top Trooper Competition was held at the Tactical Training Center March 31st to April 4th, 2025, with 138 troopers, including 25 females from across the state, who competed in the event. Throughout the four-day competition, troopers were tested on their driving and firearm skills, physical conditioning and endurance, and job knowledge over the course of nine events. The skills-based driving courses measured their abilities in vehicle handling and dynamics. Their firearms proficiency and handling were tested, requiring accuracy, weapon transition skills, and target discrimination. The physical fitness courses pushed their endurance, mental toughness, and ability to perform under physical stress to the limits. These courses were all under the added stress of being timed and penalized for missed objectives and targets. Recognizing the importance of being an expert in their field, the competitors were also subjective to a written test. The highest performing individuals in this discipline participated in an oral interview conducted by a board of Highway Patrol field supervisors. They were challenged to answer job-related questions and professionally articulate themselves. The winner of this year's competition was also eligible to represent Texas at the National Top Trooper event held at the DPS Tactical Training Center in May. As a result of this year's competition, the Javier Arana Jr. Top Trooper Award is presented to Trooper Danny Basie, Highway Patrol K-9 Unit, Northwest Texas Region, for this year's top female competitor, and Corporal Kip Staten, Highway Patrol Emerging Technology Unit, North Texas Region, for this year's top male competitor.
Thank you.
In 1970, Adolph Thomas was the first African-American to graduate from the Department of Public Safety Training Academy. During his career, he was promoted through the ranks from trooper to narcotics sergeant, narcotics captain, commander of the training academy, and chief of staff services before his retirement in 1995. Over his DPS career and even afterward as a civilian criminal justice instructor, Chief Thomas excelled in the areas of mentoring fellow employees, training others, and civic engagement. The Adolph Thomas Distinguished Service Award was created to honor DPS employees who display excellence and distinguish themselves in those same three areas. This employee began her career with the department in July 2019 in the Driver's License Division. She has been instrumental in the success of numerous key initiatives, showcasing her ability to translate complex information into easily understandable formats. She maintains continuous communication with colleagues, which facilitates efficient operations and the team's well-being. She is a key contributor to the accuracy and accessibility of the division's SharePoint resources, ensuring colleagues are consistently informed of vital updates, including bi-monthly work task rotations and staff changes. This employee's commitment to teamwork is evident in her consistent support of customer inquiries and proactive efforts to improve customer service. Her ability to provide valuable research on programs and her willingness to lead special projects and provide comprehensive training sessions highlight her dedication to team development and knowledge sharing. Her adaptability has been another key strength, as demonstrated by her willingness to take on additional responsibilities while maintaining a positive and collaborative attitude. Her ability to maintain operations in the absence of her supervisor demonstrates her leadership capabilities. This employee's dedication extends beyond her professional responsibilities, as her significant contributions to the church include producing and disseminating weekly newsletters, promoting clothing and food drives, and empowerment luncheons and youth outreach programs. She consistently exemplifies a spirit of service and dedication and is a valuable asset to her team and the community. In recognition of her distinguished service, Lead License Specialist Kiana Bailey is hereby awarded the 2025 Adolph Thomas Distinguished Service Award. This employee began his career with the department in 2010 as a state trooper. In 2013, he was promoted to tactical flight officer and stationed in Del Rio, where he began volunteering his time and services as a board member for the Del Rio Airport. He was promoted to pilot in 2014 in Laredo, and after 3 years, decided to return to being a TFO in Houston. He serves as the Southeast Region's firearm instructor, is part of the Aerial Use of Force training team assisting air crews across the state in aerial and ground-based firearms proficiency, volunteers to mentor and teach new TFOs in the division, and serves as an instructor for the division's new TFO schools held several times a year. He shows a remarkable dedication by mentoring new and less experienced pilots and TFOs, offering guidance, support, and knowledge. This employee has taken on the responsibility of developing and leading a series of internal training programs and special missions that have directly improved the skill sets of numerous team members, as well as the division's recruiting efforts. Additional volunteer efforts include deploying to Florida during Hurricane Milton to assist in the aftermath and serving as a trail ambassador for several local bicycle trail riding parks. He keeps bicycle trails clear of debris and helps maintain damaged trails after storms and heavy rainfall. He consistently demonstrates a commitment to the professional growth of his colleagues, contributes to fostering a collaborative and supportive work environment, and exemplifies a strong sense of civic responsibility. In recognition of his distinguished service, Tactical Flight Officer Dustin Gardner is hereby awarded the 2025 Adolph Thomas Distinguished Service Award. On June 25th, 2024, Trooper Danny Nunez was working Operation Lone Star in El Paso when he was informed of a distressed male subject in a canal adjacent to the Rio Grande River. Trooper Nunez and Border Patrol agents Jason Hartman, Ruben Gonzalez, and Christopher Wells immediately responded by traveling east along the canal's levee road. The water current was moving swiftly, so Trooper Nunez grabbed his swift water rescue rope and proceeded downstream of the male subject. Nunez entered the gate and successfully deployed his rescue rope to the subject and, with the assistance of Border Patrol agents, pulled the male subject to safety. Approximately 1 minute later, a second male subject was discovered in the canal needing assistance. After their first attempt to rescue the individual failed, Trooper Nunez and Agents Hartman, Gonzalez, and Wells ran approximately a half mile downstream to another gate. Trooper Nunez and Agent Wells deployed rescue ropes, and the subject caught both ropes and was pulled to safety. Both subjects were released to the U.S. Border Patrol for further evaluation and processing. In recognition of their significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of lives, Trooper Danny Nunez is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award, and Border Patrol agents Jason Hartman, Christopher Wells, and Ruben Gonzalez, who could not be here today, are hereby awarded the Director's Award. On December 19, 2024, Lieutenant Pilot Clay Lacey and Sergeant TFO Frank Eric Gunnels responded to Parker County to assist in the search of three missing children, ages 9, 10, and 11. The children, unfamiliar with the area, had wandered into the dense woods near their home and failed to return, with temperatures dropping into the mid-30s. After nearly 12 hours of searching, Parker County deputies requested aerial support from aircraft operations. Lieutenant Lacey and Sergeant Gunnels responded quickly using their forward-looking infrared system to scan the heavily wooded terrain. Initially guided by incomplete ground intelligence, the air crew began asking more in-depth questions and adjusted their search strategy. Demonstrating exceptional skill and perseverance, Lacey and Gunnels located the children deep in a wooded area far north of the original search zone. Lacey and Gunnels relayed the children's position to ground officers and directed them through the rugged terrain to their location. The children were lightly dressed in shorts and t-shirts and showed early signs of cold exposure. They were wrapped in jackets by officers and safely navigated back to an awaiting vehicle where they were transported for medical evaluation. In recognition of their significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of lives, Lieutenant Pilot Clay Lacey and Sergeant TFO Eric Gunnels are hereby awarded the Life Saving Award. On December 21st, 2024, Troopers Brendan Starr and Colton Perales were dining at a local restaurant when a subject at a nearby table suddenly collapsed and lost consciousness. Both troopers took immediate action by promptly evaluating the subject for signs of life and determined there was no pulse and he was not breathing. Without hesitation, Trooper Perales lifted the man from his chair and positioned him on his back to ensure a clear airway. Trooper Starr began administering chest compressions, and after multiple cycles, the subject regained consciousness. Trooper Starr and Perales remained on the scene until EMS arrived and transported the subject to a hospital for further medical evaluation. In recognition of their significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of lives, Troopers Colton Perales, who is currently on military leave, and Brendan Starr are hereby awarded the Life Saving Award. On August 31st, 2018, Senior Trooper Brian Freeman was off duty and traveling in his personal vehicle when he noticed dust and debris leaving the highway onto a gravel road. He observed a car in a tall grassy field that had been involved in an accident, so he turned around and entered the field to assist with any injuries. The vehicle had left the roadway at a high rate of speed and struck a tree, and all the occupants were unconscious. Trooper Freeman discovered that all the doors were either locked or severely damaged, but he was able to awaken the male driver and gain access to the vehicle. The other occupants were four young children who had suffered injuries from the crash. The most severely injured was the front seat passenger, who was not restrained by a seatbelt. The male driver noticed smoke and realized the grass and vehicle were catching fire. Trooper Freeman and the driver removed the three children from the back seat to safety. Without regard for his own safety, Trooper Freeman returned to the vehicle as the flames intensified. Due to the passenger door being crushed shut, Trooper Freeman entered the vehicle from the driver's side and removed the young female passenger to safety. Trooper Freeman provided medical care until EMS arrived, with one of the passengers airlifted to a children's hospital for advanced life-saving care. The passenger, now in high school, recently wrote an essay during the Thanksgiving holidays, giving thanks to Trooper Freeman for saving her life. In recognition of his significant and decisive response to a life-threatening situation resulting in the saving of a life, Trooper Brian Freeman is hereby awarded the Life-Saving Award. Over the past several years, the Houston DNA section of the Crime Lab Division has shown unwavering dedication in addressing numerous challenges while achieving significant operational advancements and improvements. The ultimate goal in their cases is not only performing a DNA comparison, but also entering the DNA profile into CODIS so that the profile can search local, state, and national databases to assist in solving cases or aiding investigations. From 2018 through 2024, the team has made CODIS entries in over 4,500 cases, resulting in over 2,300 offender hits, 350 forensic hits, 1,600 conviction matches, and approximately 2,492 investigations that have been supported. Despite fluctuations in staffing, continuous training, increasing operational demands, and the challenges of covering a service area of over 3.5 million people, this team not only met its own operational requirements, but also provided support to other laboratories through insourcing. The Houston DNA team has completed the analysis of over 350 DNA cases for other DPS laboratories. In the last 5 years, the Houston DNA section has evaluated case records and/or analyzed additional evidence in over 50 cold cases, with at least five of those cases having been solved. The Houston DNA section has significantly lowered the average case age, increased the number of reports released, maintained a 90-day or less turnaround time for sexual assault kit cases, and trained many new staff members. Members of the Houston DNA section are here today as we commend and recognize their hard work and dedication. They are hereby awarded the unit citation.
Great teamwork.
Thank you all. It's a great work.
Back to work. Well, that concludes our presentations for today. As I always say at these meetings, it is the highlight for the commission for these service awards to be given for these citations and recognitions of valor and sacrifice. We love all the people who receive these awards, and we thank their families for standing behind them and making it possible for them to serve the Department and the state. With that, we will take a 5-minute break, and then the commission will reconvene. Thank you.
Public Safety Commission is back in open session. The time is 10:40 in the morning. Is there anybody wishing to give public comment today? Anyone in the auditorium wishing to give public comment today? Hearing none, public comment is now closed. Go to item 7 on our agenda, the director's report. I'll turn it over to Colonel Martin.
Chairman, commissioners, and now we would like to have the Highway Patrol Top Trooper presentation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Tyler Harpaul. I've been a major here at headquarters for about 4 years. I've had the fortunate opportunity to be involved with the National Top Trooper and State Top Trooper since the inception of it in 2012. Since 2012, you heard earlier about how we came up with the name for Javier Arana to remember him. He exemplified everything a trooper was. When we first started that event, we had 20 competitors in the first event. 20 competitors. We handled it with about 5 or 6 people, and it was very easy to do. But over the years, it's grown significantly. Since that time now, we've upped it to about 138, as you heard, including 25 females. Two of them competed in that first event, two. So from 2 to 25 in about 13 events, that's awesome. So if we could, trooper objectives here, you heard about all everything they do. One things that we didn't put on there, everybody who put this together really messed it up. That was me. One of the best things about our Top Trooper event is that we get to identify our future. We get to see those troopers that are coming up and are going to lead our agency. And I feel really good about that after we see what goes on out there. In fact, on that previous slide when we had up there, you saw a trooper or a corporal on the front row. He's now one of our captains in Lubbock District. The young woman who was in charge of Top Trooper this year, Captain Dina Lewis, actually won the event a few years ago. So we do believe somebody who comes up and performs well in this event will usually be a high performer in our agency. And I think those two individuals back that up 100%. 3 firearms events, 3 driving events, 2 PT events, knowledge exam. We kind of changed it up this year. And in that event this year, we had a test that we gave them. The top 5 moved forward in that test and got to interview with the chief of the Texas Highway Patrol. Not many individuals get to take that time and get to interview a board that's chaired by the chief of the Texas Highway Patrol. We look at that as we're preparing our troopers for the future, preparing them for that interview board for sergeant, for highway patrol lieutenant, and like we exemplified earlier, for captain down the road. This is an example of what we did this year. 138 competitors, including 25 females. We did that by growing the event, by pushing it out on social media, by including our field operations more. We've grown that event significantly. We've got more participants, and the largest it's been this year. We couldn't have done that without the partnerships of our media. Chief Miller and her team helped us so much with that, putting things together, putting out the event to social media. So our other competitors, other agencies, excellent recruiting tool also, we use that. Here you can see the two winners this year, Trooper Danny Basie. This is Danny's 3rd time. We've told her she cannot compete anymore because she continues to win it. So much that we now have to come up with another breast bar to indicate that she's won 3 times. We're proud to do that. She's done an outstanding job. She continues to do well. She's another one of those female leaders for the future for us. And you have Corporal Kip Staten. Kip, one of the most intelligent people, and I dare any one of you to try to outdo him in a pistol competition. He is an excellent shot and does an excellent job, and he will be representing our agency in the future as well. This is our Southeast Texas team that actually won our team event. We've done a team building event for that the last few years. It's been a tug of war competition. This year we changed it up, and we decided to do a little dodgeball. You say, how does dodgeball relate? It's not just like the movie. We change it up a little bit. We did allow you have to have strategy. You have to work as a team. You have to communicate with each other. So that's what we're doing out here, and that's what we're wanting to see. Just as a side note, the Southeast Texas team previously was last place. Last place the year before. This year, they're first place. So they were worst to first. They put in an effort and did a great job. Again, Chief Miller and Blake Breeden with THP did a great job putting us out on social media. We started getting a bunch of phone calls. Hey, man, how are y'all doing this? What are y'all doing here? That's how we came up with the idea for the National Top Troopers shortly after that, and that's how we progressed to that event. National Top Troopers, we started getting all that feedback, all that hits from social media, Oklahoma, Ohio. We did that, and surely next thing you know, Colonel Taylor and Chief Ripper say, hey, Ty, we need to move forward on that. We're going to do this. So we started working together, communication with media, with everybody, and we started pushing out. We talked a little trash. We enticed some people to do some things, but it worked out real well, very well. You'll see in one of the countdowns, we had 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is one of the countdowns that we had. Did that for the last 5 days of the event. What was great about that also, we had some other states that came in along and did that. New Mexico pushed out some events. Ohio pushed out some things that they were doing. So we got their juices flowing. Initially, we had about 22 teams that were going to sign up, but we wound up having 15. Now, you may say 15 out of 50. This is our first year event. This first year we got it done. We were very excited to have those 15, and it was a very tough competition for us. One of the things that we had go on and during our event, also, we took our top two troopers at the end of our events and said, all right, you're going to represent us a month later in National Top Troopers. So we didn't have a whole lot of time to get them prepared, spend a little more time. But they did do very well, except Danny, our winner, she wasn't able to do that. For some reason, she decided to go to Costa Rica instead of, yeah, I know, silly. But she decided to go to Costa Rica instead of participating in National Top Trooper. Really, we don't blame her one bit. I'd have done the same thing. So she did that. So we had to have somebody fall in second place. We had our second place female come in, and Andrea Powell. She did an outstanding job. We did the same events that we did during the State Top Trooper, except we added another physical fitness event, and we condensed it to over about 2 days instead of 3 days for us, or 4 days to do it like we do with the State Top Trooper. So it truly was a little more grueling task for these guys to do, and these guys and girls to do. So it was a very interesting event, and they were very complimentary to us during that. Kip did outstanding for us, and like I said, Andrea represented us well as a fill-in, I guess you could say, for Danny, but she did more than just fill in. Andrea actually came in third place overall. Again, we talked about earlier about the depth and the impressiveness of our employees and those that are coming up. This is a prime example of one of our employees stepping up, helping another employee. They were encouraging each other during that event, and Andrea got up there and just rocked it. And Kip did outstanding also. It was a very tough competition. Overall, New York came in first place, and that hurts me to say that, like you will not believe. And Oklahoma also, outstanding job. The great thing about both of these winners, and I'll say for all the other competitors as well, there wasn't the ego out there. They had the drive, which is great, but they were helping each other. You had people from Missouri yelling at people from Oklahoma saying, come on. People from Texas yelling at people from New York saying, come on, cheering them on. Nobody's saying, I hope you fail. I'm going to beat you on this. It's like, hey, you can do better by doing this. It is outstanding to watch that camaraderie, that development, that leadership, helping one another. We're one team. We're one family, and they did an outstanding job during that. Again, New York, they did an outstanding job during their event. They worked together. Of course, Lindsay, she won first place, and then their male came in fourth, I believe, overall. So he did an outstanding job, too. During the entire event. You see an overall group picture here. outstanding job by everyone involved. We allowed our participants and our alternates to participate in the event. We felt we should reward them for the job they did. Just to note, in our top trooper and state event, 0.03 was the score differential between first and second place. Competition's tight. It's tough. They did an outstanding job during their entire event. Future hosts. We made a committee. We're going to keep this going in the future. Ohio will be ranking. We'll be doing 26. California, 27. Oklahoma is supposed to be open up a new facility in 28. And then they will come in and do that. And then we will host again the fifth annual event. So we'll be doing that again. We couldn't have done this without the continued support of our chain of command and our staff and everybody out there. One of the things that was heard numerous times during the entire event was, man, y'all got a great facility. Man, it's great to see your colonels came out here. Your chiefs came out here. Wow, that's great. We don't have to go anywhere else to do this. We can shoot right here. We can drive right here. That was outstanding. That was said numerous times throughout the entire event. They were very impressed with our facility. We couldn't have done it without our teamwork from our TOD, firearms, fitness and wellness, driving, CID and Rangers. Everybody worked together, our team, you guys. I said earlier we did it with very few people helping along. We had more than 50-plus people from the field to help coordinate and get this event going, to help judge, to help observe. Work together. TMU put all their first responders for their EMTs together to help us out with that. And then our administration, our administrative staff there in the office, and then our friends from HEB, Axon, Hawk Power Auto Parts, or Auto Superstore, they made generous donations, and DPSOA also made generous donations, which you all see. But it was an outstanding event. We look forward to competing in the future. Our event next year, our state top trooper, will be in March. And then we will have about 6 months to prepare. It will be in September, late September, in Ohio. We're hoping we could use the May weather here for us this year as a as something that would help us succeed, because all these other northern states weren't used to it, and it wound up being absolutely beautiful weather, 80 degrees and sunny, and dang it. we were disappointed in that. But overall, great event, and we couldn't have done it without the support of everyone in here. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Good job.
I have one question for you.
Yes,
real
sir.
Quick, regarding the funding of it, it's sponsorships for the event that we hosted.
Yes.
But what about sending our team to another state? Is there a need there as well?
We may have to do that. Usually we're able to encumber that through our usual funding. We've done that in the future, but anytime we can get additional funding some way to do that, we will. And Ohio is going to help out any way they can by trying to get as many donors as they can to help out with, like we had meals from HEB. They fund their lunch. So the competitors who came weren't out anything for meals for that. So that helped out very, very much so.
Would it be possible to use the Future Academy out there as a host facility, almost like an Olympic Village?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be very something. The biggest thing will be for us, we'll be having to compete with our schools, because we're going to be full up with schools, recruit schools. So we're going to have to work with TOD to make sure we can get that done. But I guarantee you, Colonel Goodson will make sure that gets done.
Yeah, I was just balancing the calendars out to make sure that we can fit it in there.
Yes,
but it would be a really great way to showcase the facility. And even though these are the top troopers from the other agencies, you never know. You might get a recruit or two.
Actually, we had about three that are working on it. And I told them from the get-go, we're going to be trying
three,
to kill
or three.
You. Three out of 30 is a pretty good, I think we'll take that every day. So it is great.
Any other questions, commissioners? All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you all.
Chairman?
Your update, yeah. It's still your report.
So the top trooper, that's something we're extremely proud of. We were the leaders in the physical fitness requirements for a state agency and other agencies follow. But when we have these competitions, it's more than just the winners and losers and the camaraderie. It's our officers are better every day when they train to shoot, drive, physical fitness. So this is in line with, you know, we want everybody training to compete for these competitions because it makes them better in their day-to-day jobs. But overwhelming the support that we got from other states that really didn't know what this was until it was over. The ones that participated were bragging rights, and then the states that didn't participate were wondering why they didn't participate, who made that decision not to send them, because they all got a copy of the video. And so, you know, among state police, it's very competitive, competing for vehicles and talents and weapons and training and requirements. Everybody wants to be the best of the best. And this was a great competition. And nationally, it was from New York to California. Colonels, superintendents, commissioners were reaching out and talking about this competition. So it was a great event. I'm just glad that we were the first. So Ohio, they'll be the second. And then when our training facility is complete, and it'll come back around to us. I just have a couple of things to talk about in the update, and I'll start off with the border update. The good news about the border is it's very steady state, but there's the illusion that, you know, the border is 100% secure. We still border with Mexico. The cartels are still smuggling. We still make arrests every day. And just to give you an example, of the last 5 weeks, DPS troopers made 438 criminal arrests, 392 apprehensions of migrants that were turned over to Border Patrol. We had 41 pursuits, 22 bailouts. We seized 396 pounds of hard drugs. That's meth, cocaine, and fentanyl. We seized 127,000 in cash and 36 firearms. So we're making 90 to 100 arrests a week. We're apprehending about 100 migrants a week. The work continues. They're going to, you know, that's always been the case. There's always been cartels are going to smuggle people and drugs north and weapons and money south. But these numbers are at an all-time low, the number of migrants coming across the border. I didn't bring the report with me, but if you look at all nine sectors, it averages about 230 a day apprehensions. At one time, we were over 10,000. So that's from California to Brownsville. Then when you separate California, Arizona, and the New Mexico numbers, which are included in El Paso, Texas sector, it's less than 100 migrants a day apprehended in Texas. So it's just at all-time low of people looking to turn themselves into Border Patrol. So these number of arrests and these number of migrant apprehensions from Texas DPS, these are all would-be gotaways. These are people that are trying to get away and not avoid Border Patrol detection. In addition to that, when you look at the border funding that the legislature provides, there's a lot of stuff that we do that's outside of the border area that's border related. And currently, we're involved in all the ICE operations statewide. We're working with FBI and HSI on these newly created Homeland Security Task Force, not Senate Bill 36, Texas DPS, newly created division, but separate from that, directed at national security threats and apprehending and deporting those individuals. So we're involved in that. We're still operating the criminal illegal immigrant program. And then we still, through the Texas Anti-Gang Centers, the TAGs, we're still working the TDA and Venezuelan gangs and really all gangs and drugs, but prioritizing these national security threats. In addition to that, we're working with, and I don't want to get in front of, if I talk about technology and border barriers that the federal government is looking at, that's really outside of ours. You know, we have regular conversations with them about what they're doing, how that will integrate with our border operations, and technology that they're going to invest in that we will have access to. So just it's a great border update. I'll put it that way. It's definitely going in the right direction. And the numbers just in the last 5 weeks are getting smaller and smaller instead of going the opposite direction. So it's getting better instead of worse as time goes on. The next update, we just finished the 89th legislative session. Our CFO, Susie Whittington, is going to give an overall update here in a minute. One thing that's been talked about a lot is this Homeland Security division within the department. It hasn't been signed by the governor, so I don't want to get out in front of any of that. But at our next commission meeting, we'll have a lot of recommendations and a better overview of what that is and what it does. But we already have the Office of Homeland Security at the Department of Public Safety. It's an office of six people. They do a lot of stuff. A lot of people don't know that I'm the Homeland Security Director for Texas also. So I'm the Homeland Security Advisor to the governor. And under that, I'm appointed to chair the Homeland Security Council and the Private Sector Advisory Council. So there's a lot of responsibilities that come under that role, and we're doing it with a handful of people. So this office, when signed by the governor, or if signed by the governor, will help me coordinate the 28 agencies that are assigned to the Homeland Security Council. It will help the Homeland Security Office with this five-year Homeland Security strategic plan, helping the COGS develop their plans, and then the implementations of those plans, and then the annual report that goes to the governor. It'll help them with the infrastructure liaison program, the mass casualty tabletop exercises that they do, the bomb-making materials program, the BMAP program that they put on. It'll help us streamline border security intelligence, the planning preparedness for critical infrastructure, just so many things that we're responsible for doing. This gives us the personnel and the infrastructure to put that stuff together under one umbrella. And all this complements what the governor's doing and the legislature with the funding of the new cyber command in San Antonio at UTSA, and all this protecting critical infrastructure in Texas. So, you know, we're thankful for that bill, and we'll have a better update at the next commission meeting. And then the last thing I'll touch on is, it just broke loose in the last few days, is the civil unrest, the protests, the anti-ICE and immigration protests nationwide. These protests, there's a lot of them. You know, it came on pretty quick. We're very thankful for the Texas legislature, because a few weeks ago, we didn't know about this. So when we're talking about funding, we're expected to respond to whatever the event is anywhere in Texas to protect property and people. We didn't know when we're talking about overtime and staffing and funding. The legislature funded new FTEs. They funded technology. All the tools that we're using this weekend to protect Texas was funded, not knowing that these protests were coming. So we're very thankful to be put in a position where we're proactive and we're always prepared. And we've never been better prepared to deal with these protests. And I can tell you that we're having daily phone calls with our police chiefs at all levels, the small, medium, and large cities, and our federal partners have never been more engaged. So the Capitol is always ground zero for us. We're really overprotected with contingency plans there for worst case scenarios. We plan for the worst and hope for the best. Austin PD, the cities are, this is a lot different than the civil unrest of the summer of 2020. Cities are a lot more proactive, allowing people to throw rocks and injure officers, allowing people to damage property is just unacceptable. And we're getting that across the board from all of our police chiefs that we work to support. We've deployed, I think the governor put out a press release yesterday, over 2,000 troopers and 5,000 National Guard. We're tracking over 50 protests this weekend. There's a few that we're prioritizing, but we're concerned about all of them. And, you know, we don't want to talk about our operational plans and give away our secrets to protect. But we're much like, you know, when the summer of 2020, when the protests stopped, 6 months later, we were still making arrests for people that exploited those peaceful protests to commit crimes. And this is no different. So we stood up a unit that this last weekend here in Austin, we made 5 arrests, and Austin PD made 9 arrests. They had 3 officers injured. There's several bad actors that were in that haven't been arrested yet. We have a team that is working to identify them, and we've got a 2-year statute of limitations, and on felonies, depending on what the crime is, even longer. And so it might be a year from now, and there's nothing better than somebody that think they got away with something and you knock on their door 6 months later and hit them with a felony charge for throwing a rock and injuring an officer. All agencies, even the U.S. Attorney's Office, is on board with holding them accountable, doing everything we can to minimize and discourage these agitators. We're prepared for it. A good example is this last weekend, this last protest in Austin, there were several federal buildings that were damaged. Some of those we made arrests, some of those that we're working on identifying. But once they're arrested, even if they're arrested on a state charge and it's filed here in the Travis County District Attorney's Office, we don't have a lot of confidence in the prosecution of property crimes in Travis County. If it's a federal building, there's a federal charge that we can file with the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they can adopt our case. We can dismiss the state case and get better prosecution to deter these from occurring in the future. So as we do that stuff, we're going to announce it. Not that we're bragging about it, but we want to discourage others from committing these crimes and let them know that these are, most of them are peaceful protests. And you have all these groups coming together to exercise their First Amendment right. Everybody supports that. There's not a law enforcement agency in Texas that doesn't support that. It's the bad actors in those groups. And we're working very closely with the group organizers. The one in San Antonio last night was a good example. The organizers were very cooperative with law enforcement. And they were actually telling their peaceful protesters, if somebody gets out of line, if they start putting on gloves and masks and pulling rocks out of a backpack, sit down so law enforcement can identify the bad actors and arrest them. And these are the organizers of the protest. So there's just a lot of good people in there. It's the small group of bad actors that we always see. So that's really an overall update without giving away too many of our secrets. But we've engaged every resource we have, every division, even our non-law enforcement divisions working on this, all of our assets, all of our resources. And we've got a good plan, and we've got contingency plans and backups. And of course, the Texas Military Department is our force multiplier with 5,000 soldiers. Hopefully you don't see them, but they're there to reinforce and back us up. And that concludes my update. Pending questions.
How would you describe the presence of the uniform presence during the session? Did we get good feedback on our people down at the Capitol?
We had a great session. Our intelligence was spot on. When we had a protest, we had a pretty good gauge of how big that protest was going to be. We were able to prepare, properly staff. Bringing in our troopers from the field is always a hit with members. When they see uniformed troopers from their hometown areas and they engage with them, I get photographs, selfies with the members and our troopers. But at the end of the day, we fine-tune every session. We get a little bit better. This was by far our best session at preventing attacks, mitigating threats, working with members. We've got a process with the magnetometers. If somebody comes in, they're carrying a gun. We've got a process. We had some very politically motivated legislation this time, so we had some protests internally at the Capitol. Couldn't be more proud of the DPS team and even Austin PD in support of our team in that Capitol area. But a lot of good feedback. There was really a great session, and our troopers were honored multiple times at the end of the session by the House administration, by the House and the Senate for their performance during the session.
Yeah, I was down there yesterday at the Capitol and noticed the mounted patrol, and they just very impressive look on the grounds there. And I had the opportunity to attend the Battle of the Flowers parade in San Antonio, and the Mounted Patrol participated in that parade and just did an outstanding job. Really proud of them and how far that program has come since it was started, 10 years ago, 11 years ago?
Yes, sir. And we had an unprecedented amount of threats during this session. But it's seamless coordination when a member gets a threat or state leadership gets a threat, and how that's worked through the Capitol. And 9 times out of 10, the bad actors are not in Austin or the Capitol area, so it involves other regions or even other states. But they have really fine-tuned identifying the bad actors and working with even other states to knock on doors and make arrests, and we'll secure warrants here in Travis County and get them arrested Arizona, wherever they might be, really all over the United States.
Commissioners, any? All right. Thank you, Colonel Martin. Before we move on to item eight, new business, I want to recognize representatives from the Capitol who are here with us today. We have Scott McNaughton from Governor Abbott's office, Suzanne Tomlin from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's office, Kevin Patterson from Senator Flores's office. He's Senator Flores' general counsel. Haley Plumley from Senator Flores' office, and then from Senator Birdwell's office, we have Shelby Sterling and Truman Crawford. We thank you all for being here today and appreciate your support and that of all the members of the legislature, especially during the 89th legislature. So thank you very much. Item 8 on the agenda is new business. Item A of that is report discussion of possible action on the use of state seized funds, and that'll be Chief Whittington.
Good morning.
And I should say I'm calling you for items A and B.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So as you know, the department collects funds through the equitable sharing programs. Those are the asset forfeitures obtained through arrests. And then disposition of those funds is handled through the court system. And how funds are treated depends on what court they come out of. Like if it's a state court, there'll be state funds. If it's a federal court, they're federal funds. And that's important because the state funds will expire at the end of each biennium. And the federal funds we can transfer forward to the next biennium. So today we're asking to spend some state-seized funds before they expire. So next slide. Last year, the department collected $866,413. And so far this year, we've collected just under $392,000. And then based on the averages that we've seen coming in, we think we'll collect an additional about $140,000 over the summer months. So we're looking at an estimated total of $1.4 million. And we're allowed to spend those funds for law enforcement purposes. The lieutenant colonels worked with the law enforcement divisions to get their input on equipment that's most needed. And they have recommended the following purchases: duty holsters for Highway Patrol, Training Division, and Executive Protection Bureau, rifle-related shields for the Highway Patrol, body armor kits for the Texas Rangers, and replacement tablets for CID. And since the state seized funds are going to lapse on August 31st, if we don't spend them, we would order the equipment up to the amount available. We would adjust the quantities if we need to, if the funds come in higher or lower, as necessary. And so we would just need your approval to move forward with these purchases. We're happy to take questions.
Is there a commissioner wishing to make a motion?
I'll make a motion and have a question too, and you a second.
Is there a second?
A second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to appropriate or to approve the use of 1.382025 of state seized funds as described on the attached slide. Is there a question?
Yes, please. So I note the last item is a replacement. Are the other three items additional, or are they replacing worn out?
The body armor kits and the rifle shields are replacements, but I think that the duty holsters may be new. Is that right? It's a new design.
Yes, the duty holsters are a new design for the new handguns. It has the sighting system on it on top, as well as for the light. That's for Highway Patrol only. The rifle related shields are in addition to the ones we already have. We were short. The lightweight body armor kits are for Texas Rangers that wear white shirts and ties every day, and this is armor that they can wear under those shirts where it's not just obvious bulky body armor.
So it's a new type?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Got one other question.
Commissioner Long.
So, Chief, these estimated collections, so is the idea we can spend, like if we get $1,410,000, we can spend right up to that amount? And we just keep our eye on that and adjust the quantities?
Exactly. Okay. So we might be able to buy a few more tablets or, whatever else that we can adjust those.
Terrific. But the idea is to spend it all.
We would like to spend it all since it will lapse if we don't.
Thank you.
Adjust your motion. You made a motion, I said,
would you like me to readjust my motion? How would you like me to readjust my motion?
I can adjust the motion. Commissioner Blair made a motion to approve this request up to the amount available as described.
Yes.
Are there any further questions about that motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. And now the item B.
Again, Susie Whittington, Chief Financial Officer. So you've heard that we had a very good and productive session. We were very blessed to have a great deal of support from both the House and Senate, as well as from the governor and the lieutenant governor on our funding requests. So there were two bills that are generally laid out each session. One is the General Appropriations Bill, which is Senate Bill 1, and then House Bill 500 is a supplemental bill. And these bills have not been signed yet, and the governor does have line item veto authority. But right now, I can report on the current status of those bills. And for simplicity's sake, I've just combined the bills together. They're different in that the effective dates are different. The House Bill 500 will have an immediate effect once it's signed by the governor. And then Senate Bill 1 would have an effective date of September 1st. So this slide shows new appropriations that are based on the request that we submitted that you all approved in August. The highest priority for the department was for additional law enforcement personnel, and we have 400 new positions added in the bills. And these are much needed positions in all of the law enforcement divisions and include 95 support positions for the administrative divisions. The cold case team includes 6 Texas Rangers and 46 positions in the labs and some other support positions to assist the Texas Rangers in those cold cases. The merit and retention pay for non-commissioned staff was one of our other high priority items, and we will receive $16 million to fund career ladders and merit pay for high performing staff and for hard to fill positions and those positions with high turnover rates. And that'll help us out a lot in our budgeting. The technology funding for the driver license and call centers includes funding for remote issuance of driver licenses and a document portal for a more automated licensing process. The accounts payable system and the content management system, those are back office systems that we just needed funding for. Got a pretty good amount for IT infrastructure funding, and that'll allow the department to effectively protect and secure the applications, networks, data, and systems from like a data center outage or a cyber attack or even a physical loss of hardware. So these funds will also be used to begin a data classification program that will help us better protect all of the very sensitive data that the department has. These bills include funding for 6 replacement helicopters and 1 additional fixed wing aircraft, and that comes also with some aircraft maintenance funding. The base vehicle budget was increased to $138 million, which is an increase of $18 million, which will help us lower the turn-in mileage across the fleet. The appropriations include funding for 399 additional driver license staff and 130 driver license call center staff to help manage the volume and the demands in those areas. Funding for law enforcement equipment includes an in-car camera system for all the black and white vehicles and a standard body camera solution for all commission personnel. Increased funding to maintain our facilities is included, and they added substantially more funding for deferred maintenance. We have 291 state-owned buildings, and we haven't had enough money to handle the repairs for quite some time. So we'll have an additional $20 million, which will really help us for the biennium. Also included is a crime lab generator and an upgrade to cameras and security equipment statewide. Next slide. So additional funding was included for DPS that we did not include in our appropriations request, including the agency's been tasked with taking over the security at the Alamo, which resulted in the legislature adding 67 state troopers and 20 security guards to our budget. Also included was $10 million for the expansion of the Texas Ranger Museum in Waco, along with some office space for Ranger Company F. Funding for driver license offices in Brenham and Hays counties was also added. And the legislature added funding to establish a performance improvement group in the driver license division to study the core functions of the license issuance process. See if there's any process improvements we could do. And for the last 4 years, the agency's been directed to promote a statewide safe gun storage campaign. And this time they have increased that amount by $500,000. So we'll have $1.5 million for that campaign. $2 million was added for the safety education program in public schools, and that would provide enhanced traffic and pedestrian safety education for students. And finally, there were some individual bills that passed this session that also appropriated funding. House Bill 48 creates an organized oil field theft prevention unit with two CID agents and two support personnel. Probably need a lot more than that, but they can get started. Senate Bill 36 establishes a Homeland Security Division. Colonel already mentioned that. That would be within the department. We already have Homeland Security here, but it would add 19 FTEs and $4.6 million to provide planning for border security operations and to coordinate with those other law enforcement entities that he mentioned earlier. And Senate Bill 1723 establishes a rapid DNA analysis pilot program, and that came with $5.1 million.
Chief, before we leave that slide, on the Brenham DL office, or last I remember that we were going to repair the existing office but not use it for DL, is that,
That was the one that there was.
Chairman, we don't currently have a plan. We weren't sure if we were going to receive this funding, but this funding will provide enough to build a brand new full driver license office and highway patrol office to house everybody there. So we'll have to decide what we're going to do with the building, but it's going to, it seems that it may cost more than it's worth to repair that building based on its square footage.
Yeah, it's been heavily damaged. All right, thank you.
So there are 48, we call riders, that follow our appropriations, and they contain specific instructions for the agency. And this time there are some new riders included, including the authority to move forward unspent funds from these areas, the licensing system that we got appropriated this last session. We haven't been able to finish that, so they're going to allow us to move the money forward to the next biennium so we can have time to get that completed. Also, there was funding for driver license offices in Katy and League City that needed to be continued, and funding for the Montgomery County training facility that we're helping to oversee.
Thank you.
One additional rider that I didn't put on the slide, increases the stipends. It will double the stipends for law enforcement for education and certifications. Also allows the officers to earn both types of stipends, whereas now they can only get one or the other. And that'll increase the maximum stipend from $2,400 a year to $8,400 a year that they could be eligible for. And then finally, the bills increase the headcount at the agency. From now, we have authority for 11,713 staff to over 13,000 people. So agency is growing. And the biennial budget will be somewhere over $4.4 billion. I'm happy to take questions.
Just back to this Department of Homeland Security, and this may be a question for the executive staff too, but in reading that statute, that SB 36, there's going to be a lot of expectations, you know, from the legislature for that Department of Homeland Security. Is this the only money that we have for this going into
No, we do have some currently. We have six people that are currently assigned to Homeland Security.
In our existing budget plus 4.6, but correct. No, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Starting yeah.
Out. In our existing, we operate off some grants. We have two positions that are grant funded. We have, there's 16 the critical infrastructure sectors, and we have two guys assigned. So we have two grant funding. The director, Mike George, is his salary is grant. Okay. And then the rest of those are just taken out of our current FTEs.
It just seems like there's gonna be a lot of eyes on it, you know.
Yes, sir.
This new department.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
All right, item C under new business, discussion and possible action on the reappointment of Debbie Ulmer to the Private Security Advisory Committee. Call Chief Wayne Mueller up for that.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. Wayne Mueller, Chief Regulatory Services Division. As you're aware, the private security program contains the Private Security Advisory Committee. It is a statutory committee with the members appointed by this commission. It's made up of seven members. Four of those positions represent the various sectors that make up the private security program, private investigators, alarm companies, locksmiths, and security guards. For the last several years, Deborah Ulmer has sat in the position representing alarm companies. Her term ended in January of this year. She's put an application for consideration for reappointment into that position. Ms. Ulmer has worked for the last 38 years in the private security alarm system industry. She's currently an employee of Acadian Total Security in the Houston area. In addition to being a member of the Private Security Advisory Committee, she's also held officer positions in a couple of security alarm trade associations over the years. She has been a contributing a participatory member of the advisory committee. Background check was conducted, and there was nothing found that would indicate any type of ineligibility for Ms. Ulmer. And so at this time, I do recommend the reappointment of Ms. Deborah Ulmer into the Private Security Advisory Committee and your consideration to place her in the security alarm representation slot for a six-year term that would end January of 2031. Be happy to try and answer any questions you might
have. I'll move that we make that appointment.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Hoard to reappoint Deborah Ulmer to the Private Security Advisory Committee in the security alarm representative position for a six-year term. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief. The remaining items under new business, item D, final determination contested cases, consideration and possible actions on proposals for decision, and I'll turn that over to General Counsel Phil Atkins.
Good morning. We have seven cases, contested cases, coming to you for consideration for a final determination. The first three cases are private security cases. For Deandra Washington, Douglas Kemp, and Theodore Berry. All of those cases are applications for commissioned security guard licenses, and they were disqualified by federal law from possessing a firearm based upon disqualifying criminal convictions, so those applications were denied. The fourth case on your docket is Edward Scroggins. That's an application for a non-commissioned security guard license, and that applicant had a disqualifying conviction that disqualifies him for 5 years. So that application was denied. The fifth and sixth cases on your docket, Sandeep Serial and James Qualls, are both revocations of vehicle inspection licenses for fraudulent emissions testing, clean scanning. And then the last case, number seven on your docket, is a revocation of a vehicle inspection station certificate and a $500 administrative penalty, again, for fraudulent emission testing. Each of these cases was heard before SOA. You have the proposals for decision in your commission materials. In each case, the department was granted the relief that we requested, and I would ask that you adopt the proposals for decision as your final determination in each of the seven cases on the agenda.
I'll move that we adopt the proposals for Ds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Long to adopt all proposals for decision under item D, new business of our published agenda for today. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. Item E, intelligence threat briefing. We'll handle that in executive session. Moving on to item 9, ongoing business report discussion, possible adoption of the following previously published rule, proposed new 37 TAC sections 28.211-28.215 concerning Texas Crime Laboratory Records Portal, and that's Chief Brady Mills.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. Brady Mills with the Crime Laboratory Division. I'm here today to request your adoption of the rules that were previously posted. These rules, 28.211 through 28.215, do concern the Texas Crime Lab Director or Texas Crime Lab Records Portal. So these rules enable us to implement Senate Bill 991, which was from last legislative session, so the 28th legislative session in 2023. And this establishes a electronic discovery portal hosted by the department to make crime lab records equally available to prosecutors and defense counsel. We did collect comments on the rules when they were posted. We had two individuals that commented. One was with a private laboratory that works both, has installations here in Texas and then outside the state. The vast majority of those comments were operational and didn't really impact the rules. There were three that did. One was had commented on how did we determine out-of-state laboratories and should they participate in Portal. We understand the comment, but we feel that the rules as written better align with legislative intent for when laboratories are supporting criminal cases here in Texas, they would participate in the portal. The other two were from the private laboratory regarded the timeliness of when rules or when the records would be available in the portal, and then also should they be done in every case. And we understand her comments, but the rules as written better align with current Texas statute regarding that they are, should be available in every case to the defense counsel and the prosecutors through a Texas statute 3914, and that they should be done as in a timely manner. The last was submitted by a defense attorney, or district attorney here in Texas. And we agree with the comment that he made, and we did change language based on his suggestion. And it better aligned with how the rules as written could be misconstrued about what the responsibilities of the prosecutors were. And it didn't really align with how statute was written. And so we modified and adopted his language to better align with Texas statute. So with that, if there aren't any questions, I would request adoption of the rules.
The modification didn't change the underlying intent of the rule?
It did not, no, sir.
I'll move we adopt the proposed new 37 TAC sections 28.211 through 28.215.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Horde to approve the new 37 TAC sections 28.211 through 28.215 concerning Texas Crime Laboratory Records Portal. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Item B, under ongoing business report discussion and possible action regarding the modification of the DPS organizational structure and the appointment, promotion, ratification, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a member of the department or commission management team. Colonel Martin, do you have anything for us?
Chairman, we don't have anything at this time. We really froze all appointments and organizational changes for the last 6 months. That being said, next meeting, August 7th, we'll have several recommendations, and I'll work with y'all before that takes place.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Colonel Martin on that? Item C, report discussion and possible action regarding ongoing criminal investigations pursuant to Government Code Section 411.0041. We'll handle that in executive session. Now moving on to item 10, our agenda reports. Are any members of the commission desiring to give a report today? We've already received the finance report, item B, from Chief Whitten. Chief, do you have anything more for us? Chief Melvin, do you have anything from the Chief Auditor's Office? Any division reports? Hearing none, we'll now move on to item 11, the consent items. Colonel Taylor, are all the consent items as published?
Correct, Chairman. There are no changes.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion on the consent items.
I'll make
Commissioner Long moves.
I'll make a motion. We approve.
Yeah.
I'll second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Long and a second from Commissioner Blair to approve all items under Section 11 of our agenda, the consent items. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Commissioners, please get any items for a future agenda to the to either Phil or Sophie before the next meeting. Item 13, discharge hearings will be scheduled for August the 6th, 2025, and the regular Public Safety Commission meeting is scheduled for August 7th, 2025. The Public Safety Commission will now go into closed session at this time, pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act, Chapter 551, to consider matters authorized to be considered in executive session under Government Code Sections 511.0710720730740076 and Government Code Section 411.0041. The time is 11:34 a.m. Public Safety Commission has ended a closed session and is now reconvened as a quorum and open session. The time is 12:47 p.m. If there is no further business, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Blair and a second from Commissioner Stodgill to adjourn the meeting. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. We are adjourned.